podcast. It is Wednesday, December 9th, as we are recording this. I am MMA Torch editor Jamie Pennick, and I am joined tonight by MMA Torch contributor Michael Bain. We are here to talk about the UFC's trifecta of events, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night, all in Las Vegas. Mike, we've got tons and tons on the docket this weekend, and most of it is excellent.
Yeah, it really is, Jamie. I mean, it's almost like we've got UFC overload this weekend, and I say that in a really good way. I mean, even, you know, the fight night card we've got coming, top to bottom, is full of interesting fights, and that's to say nothing about UFC 194, which is one of the best cards I've ever seen in my history of being a fan of mixed martial arts.
Yeah, and unsurprisingly, the Ultimate Fighter card on Friday night is probably the weakest of the three, but it has one of the best fights of the weekend in Frankie Edgar against Chad Mendes. So you can't even be upset about that, because I'm willing to sit through the crap to see that fight, and there's so much to like on each of these cards. Like you said, tomorrow night's UFC Fight Night 80 event for Fight Pass, really good card. Really good card for Fight Pass.
I think if you see this card, this is probably the best sell they've ever had for Fight Pass. I mean, it really makes me want to keep it and keep watching it. The fights are just, really something.
Yeah, there are a few fights on this card that it's absolutely a shame that they are relegated to Fight Pass, because they belong on cards with much more exposure. Obviously, talking first and foremost of the Aljamain Sterling Johnny Eduardo fight, just kind of buried on a Fight Pass prelim when that fight belongs on at least a Fox Sports 1 televised prelim, if not a main card of something, because that's two of the top 10 bantamweights in the world. At least Eduardo was on that cusp prior to injury issues keeping him out. I mean, he's been out for quite a while, but Sterling is one of the brightest prospects in this 135-pound division, and it's kind of a shame that it's buried in the midst of everything that's going on this week. That said, there's so much to like about everything that's coming this weekend. Outside of, let's throw Mendes Edgar, Aldo McGregor, and Weidman Rockhold out of the mix here. Outside of those three massive fights, what are you most anticipating on the weekend?
Well, I think the fight that jumps out right away is the Jacques Rey Souza and Yoel Romero fight. You know, we've got Souza, you can argue, has deserved a title shot any time over the last year and a half or so. And Romero is a guy that's really been surprising me lately. I picked him to lose to Machida, particularly after the debacle that happened in the Kennedy fight. He looked like he had no cardio. I thought he won that fight just because of really poor officiating, but I mean, he ran through Machida in a way that I was not expecting. So that fight for me, it's really hard to pick against Jacare, but Romero's a fighter that's on the upswing right now. And I think assuming there isn't a really close fight where Rockhold takes the title from Weidman and Weidman gets an immediate rematch, I think you're looking at the definitive number one contender fight in that particular bout.
Yeah, just even bringing up that Weidman-Rockhold fight, it's almost criminal how almost under the radar it is, because it does technically belong below the Jose Aldo-Conor McGregor fight. This is one of the rare times where the lower weight class is the marquee fight, is the more anticipated fight. But just from a skill level standpoint, from an ability standpoint, from an elite level athlete standpoint, Chris Weidman, Luke Rockhold, that might be the best co-main event the UFC's ever put on, and it's probably going to be the best middleweight fight that we've seen. On paper, it's one of the best middleweight matchups you could possibly hope for. Well, I love everything about that fight.
No, this is my fight of the year right here. You know, for so long, the UFC didn't seem to want to announce that Rockhold was getting the title fight. You know, Souza was still in the mix. And it seemed like such an obvious call for them to make. I mean, you really do have two guys who you know, outside of Rockhold getting knocked out by a TRT-infused Belfort, we've got two guys who've shown no weakness. You know, Weidman has beat the greatest fighter of all time twice now. Rockhold ran through Machida in a way that Weidman wasn't able to do so. I mean, two athletic specimens, big guys, high skill level, and I don't know how to pick this one. I mean, it's really, again, my fight of the year. I'm really looking forward to this.
We're going to get in depth on that in a little bit, and I'm going to ask you for a prediction, so just be prepared for that. But I'm gonna circle back to tomorrow night. It'll be tonight for those listening in on Thursday, as this will likely go up Thursday morning. So, this is going to be hopefully fresh in people's minds as we get into Thursday night, which is going to be an excellent card in its own right. We've got a lot coming this weekend, so I want to break down the main cards of each of these three events, and then we'll touch on we'll circle back and touch on some standout prelim fights and get some predictions on those as well. So we're gonna start tomorrow. Rose Namajunas taking on Paige VanZant in the main event of UFC Fight Night 80, a rare, extremely rare women's fight in a headliner of any type of major card. And despite what you might think of UFC Fight Pass as a service, this is still a considerably major card, and it is kind of a big deal that we've got Namajunas against VanZant. This was obviously supposed to be VanZant against Joanne Calderwood. I actually kind of really like what we have as a replacement here, and I think Namajunas is every bit as dangerous for VanZant, if not more in some respects, than Calderwood would have been. We've got Namajunas coming in here off of finally getting her first UFC win. Some delays out of her control kept her out of the cage until this fall after losing to Carla Esparza last December for the first ever women's strawweight championship fight. VanZant has looked very good time and time again in the UFC and has gotten a ton of hype coming into this. Namajunas, obviously very skilled with her grappling game. Striking game has some holes. And her defensive wrestling obviously had holes against Esparza. She was controlled on the ground for a lot of that fight. VanZant, very good ground and pound, very good top game, a little bit sloppy on the feet as well. It's a really interesting matchup here, Mike, and I'm curious your thoughts on the fight itself here, because I can see this going a number of ways depending on which of them is able to dictate the pace, whether or not Namajunas can avoid getting controlled on the ground and be more effective than she was against Esparza, and whether or not VanZant can conversely impose her will against Namajunas to control the fight, score strikes on the ground, and do what she's done in her last several fights.
Well, Jamie, I think you hit the nail on the head there and what this fight's going to come down to. And you know, for the folks that read our roundtables regularly, I issued my prediction. I think it was yesterday's column on the direction I think this fight's going. I really do like this event a lot more as the replacement fight versus VanZant against Calderwood. I think it's really easy to forget that Namajunas is only 23 years old, and while she may be the veteran as far as age goes, that's not She's not a particularly experienced fighter, and she's definitely not a very old fighter. Yeah, Van Zandt is only 21, but Nama Yunus doesn't really have much on her, both in the way of experience and really in the way of age. And what you're seeing here is hopefully and potentially the future of this division in two fighters. Hey, they both want to win. They're both highly ranked at this point in their careers, among the best in the world in their division. But I don't think a loss is necessarily going to set either one of them back very, very far. They've still got a lot of fights ahead of them, assuming that injury or a career change doesn't get in the way of that. I know Van Zandt has got a lot of hype. She's got a lot of endorsements, and she's taken a lot of flack with how hard the UFC and seemingly Reebok has pushed her. But as far as her fighting goes, it's not undeserved. She's a very strong girl for someone who is that young. She's got a lot of physical skills, and she's sloppy at times. She's very aggressive, and that leads to some sloppy exchanges and some things that you may not see out of a more seasoned fighter. But the technique is coming very quickly, and she really impressed me in her last victory. I know she finished it by armbar, but the thing that really stood out to me was how athletic and strong she is. And ultimately, I think that's going to be too much for Nama Yunus to deal with. Nama Yunus is going to get pushed around, and as long as Van Zandt can avoid getting submitted, I think she's going to have this by decision.
Yeah, I'm a really big proponent of Rose Namajunas. I've enjoyed her fights for a long time, and I mean, going back to Invicta a couple of years ago, and she's just a really entertaining personality. Her and Pat Barry might be they seem like the most fun couple in MMA.
Yeah.
And have for a long time. So I've always liked Rose Namajunas.
There's a low bar there.
It is. But
point taken.
But prior to, there was something there prior to The Ultimate Fighter. Obviously, she had fallen to Tisha Torres in Invicta. Interestingly enough, that is a shared opponent. Both of them, Van Zandt and Namajunas, lost by decision to Tisha Torres in Invicta 6 months apart in 2013. They're both very different fighters now. What stands out to me here is I'm not sure if Van Zandt is as good in controlling things on the ground as Carla Esparza. She very well might be, and if that's the case, then I do have concern on what Namajunas can do, because if she's shut down like she was in the Esparza fight, this is going to be a really long night for her, and I'm with you on that front. If Van Zandt can control the pace of this fight, take Namajunas down, work from the top, work her ground and pound, and avoid any bottom work from Namajunas, this is going to be Van Zandt's fight.
Yeah, I don't think. I mean, she's definitely not as skilled as Esparza is at this point in her career. I do think she has a lot more physical strength, despite her young age. And I think she's going to be able to, my opinion is she's going to work it to her advantage and ultimately take a decision. But it almost seems sacrilegious to pick Van Zandt at this point in her career, because it's like you're buying into the hype and you're making the popular pick because maybe you don't know what you're talking about. But she is a very talented fighter, and I think she's gonna have a very good career as probably the poster person for that division soon.
That's the thing with hype is sometimes it's not unwarranted, right. and so until someone comes along to prove it wrong. It's sometimes you can buy in. With Van Zandt, I think there's a lot there worth buying into, and that's, I think, kind of the key into tomorrow night. I would not be shocked at all if Namajunas pulls this off. If Namajunas comes in, shuts down the hype machine, takes it for herself. Like you already mentioned, she's only 23 herself. She's a very young, talented fighter in this game herself, and has made improvements even in the last year since losing to Esparza. So nothing would shock me in this fight, to be honest, because I could see Nami Yunus coming out and proving that she is the prospect worth watching in this division. Again, I would also be not surprised in the least if Van Zandt kept the hype train rolling. So, really interesting fight. I love the fight itself. I do. I am with you. I think Van Zandt wins, but I like Nami Yunus a lot, and I would not be shocked by any stretch if she pulled this off in the main event tomorrow night.
You know, it's funny that we're using the word prospect continually throughout this conversation. Nami Yunus is ranked number 4 in her division, Van Zandt ranked number 7. And I mean, these are the prospects here. You know, if we're talking about Van Zandt beating the number 4 fighter in her division as a prospect,
that's more a condemnation of the level of competition in the division than anything else.
Yeah, that is true. It's a new division, and we're just starting to see.
All right, just to segue, let's contrast that to what we have in the co-main event, where you have a guy like Jim Miller, who's been a perpetual top 15 type guy, against Michael Chiesa, who himself has been extremely talented, but might not even be in the top 20 of the lightweight division. And these are guys with immense skill, immense talent. Jim Miller is one of the long-standing guys in the UFC's lightweight division. He's entering in to this event off of a win over Danny Castillo to halt the losing streak to Donald Cerrone and Benil Dariush. He had been unbeaten in 4 straight, technically, prior to that, given the overturning of the Pat Healy fight. Michael Chiesa himself, the Ultimate Fighter winner, coming in off a win over Mitch Clark. He's won, 5 of 7 fights, I think, in the UFC so far, and doctor stoppage to Joe Lozon in September of last year. So, two really good fighters here at lightweight, one of the most packed divisions and hardest divisions to break through in the UFC, trying to stake a claim for still being relevant in 2015 and into 2016. Love the fight a lot, but it's a really interesting kind of dynamic because all of the attention has been going to the fight below it in Sage Northcutt and Cody Pfister this week, and they've been kind of getting short shrift as the co-main event on this card. I wouldn't be surprised if prior to tonight you didn't even know it was happening tomorrow, Mike.
And it's... I agree with what you're saying there. This is a fight that it's going to be entertaining. I think you're going to have a pretty high skill level shown in this fight. But Miller seems like he's kind of on the downside of his career at this point, which is kind of sad. He's fun to watch. He's a competitor. He's well-versed in every area of the sport. And for Chiesa, this is kind of a make-or-break fight for him. Are we going to continue to take him seriously or even start taking him seriously as a potential contender down the road? Because if that's what he's going for, he really needs to win this fight. Or is he just going to, you know, hang around, like you said, top 20, top 30 of the division? And if he doesn't win this fight, I don't want to write off his career by any means, but that's kind of what he's in danger of right now.
Just a quick aside, had you and Itza made it to the United Center by the time the Miller-Castillo fight had happened in July? I can't remember when you guys strolled in.
I think we arrived there, but I decided to go have a drink instead of watching that fight.
I don't think that's an unfair move at this point. So I was just curious because I couldn't remember when you guys strolled in And I just remembered myself that I sat through that fight. So,
Now,
there it
we didn't
is.
sit through it. I was there when it was going on, but I was
It
kind
wasn't
of had some muscle.
a terrible fight. It wasn't very good. It's just kind of there. Anyway, that is the co-main event. I know, real big sell job on the co-main then with that final comment, but obviously the UFC is putting a lot of eggs in the Sage Northcutt basket. It's interesting here with Northcutt, 'cause there's some stuff starting to come out regarding his father, who has been his coach and trainer. And given how he looks at 19, how ripped he is, how ridiculous his musculature is for 155 pounds, is it really surprising at all that there are stories out now that his father was in the steroid and cocaine market in the late 80s and early 90s? Because that's the reports that are starting to surface regarding Mr. Northcutt's father here. It's easy to draw parallels and to draw connections, but obviously without any hard evidence, you can't throw any accusations at Sage himself. But there's something really off about the way that he looks at 19 and the past history of his father.
I think it's a logical question to ask, and it's an unfortunate one to ask if there's nothing behind it. People don't look like that at 19, at least most normal people, even athletes don't are not quite that developed at 19. But they're
I was a
also
hockey player for 20 years and I never had thighs like that.
well, they're also typically at 19 not fighting in the UFC either, so.
Also true.
Is he just an exceptional athlete who's managed to parlay some very natural gifts into a mixed martial arts career? Or is his dad using some old connections to maybe give him a little boost? I mean, you really hope that's not true, but it's natural for people to start wondering just when you see a guy like that. And particularly when that type of evidence, or I mean, not evidence, I'm sorry, when those types of stories start emerging.
I mean, it's obviously something worth being looked into. It's a story that warrants further scrutiny. It's a story that warrants further investigation because if there's something there, then the UFC's hopeful cash cow could blow up in their face. And that's very clearly what they're trying to do here. I mean, there's no mistaking the hype placed behind Northcutt,
Absolutely.
both into, I mean, he just had his debut in October, and there was a ton of press on him into the UFC 192 event in Houston. I mean, he's a from te he's fought most of his fights in Texas. He's a Texas native himself. And so the UFC played up that local connection into UFC 192, and to his credit, he beat the crap out of Francisco Trevino and looked impressive doing it. And did that little front flip that got a lot of attention as well. And he's very clearly an athlete. That's there. There's a lot left to be done. There are a lot of skills left to be put together. I don't even think Cody Pfister believes he's the guy to stop him on his way to building that up, though.
No, I don't think so. And this is the fun thing with really young, almost prodigy-like athletes. When we're talking about Sage Northcutt or a Paige VanZant, we can't figure out what their ceiling is yet. I mean, Northcutt spent what, less than a minute in the octagon now, and you know, with the type of push and the hype that he's getting, I have no idea where his skill set really begins, and definitely not where it's going to end. And that's where we have fun imagining that these people, there's nothing he has shown me yet that says he can't be the best fighter ever. I don't think he's going to be the best fighter ever. He's probably not going to come close to that. But yeah, you know, that's it's a pretty easy investment on the UFC's part to put this kind of hype behind him. And if it doesn't pan out, it doesn't pan out. They're not really going, you know, they're not investing a whole lot at the end of the day when it comes to it.
Yeah. The main card Thursday night on UFC Fight Pass is rounded out by the fight between Elias Teodoro and Thiago Santos. This is another kind of sneaky good fight. That's really under the radar on this week because of how much else there is to talk about. But, I mean, Santos is coming in off of two first-round finishes. Teodoro is undefeated, picked up a TKO in his last fight, has stopped two of his three fights in the UFC. He's the Ultimate Fighter Nation's winner. A lot of the Ultimate Fighter winners have not really been up to snuff, but Teodoro's got something. He's a very talented fighter, and he's got a look that the UFC likes to get behind. Thiago Santos has the type of power that can really shut that down quick, but Teodoro is talented enough to put something together here. This is a really interesting fight.
It is. It's a good fight. I like Teodoro a lot. I think he's, you know, we want to bring in the conversation about ceilings again. I don't think his natural ceiling is necessarily super high, but he is a tough, strong, physical fighter who will grind it out and try his best to outwork you. And I think that's going to get him real far. He's the type of fighter that I believe really maximizes what he's been given. And you know, don't get me wrong, he's been given quite a bit to work with. Santos is a great fight for him. You're right. Santos has the power to make it a short night for anyone if you're not careful. And I think the UFC is hoping that Teodoro wins this fight and continues his ascent up the middleweight ladder. But Santos is really the right fight for him at the right time to give him a legitimate and dangerous test, which I believe he's going to pass and, you know, on to bigger and better things.
Yeah. All right, we're going to get back to the prelims here in a little bit, but I want to keep going with the main cards of the weekend because the main fights are the focus, obviously, and there's still quite a bit to get to on all fronts. So Friday night, December 11th, from the same venue as UFC Fight Night 80, the UFC is back on Fox Sports 1 with the Ultimate Fighter 22 finale, headlined by the five-round featherweight fight between Frankie Edgar and Chad Mendes. Mendes obviously coming in off the short notice loss to Conor McGregor, had been beat by Jose Aldo a second time last October in the interim, took out Ricardo Lamas in 2 minutes and 45 seconds in April. It's obvious that we have 1 through 4 in the featherweight division on display this weekend. What McGregor did to Mendes, regardless of the 2-week notice on the fight in July, was an impressive feat. And while it's a fight that I would love to see again, with both of them getting a full camp to prepare for one another, I don't write off what McGregor did in that fight at all. Mendes obviously has a ton of skill, gave Jose Aldo one of the toughest fights he's ever had at featherweight last October, just demolished Ricardo Lamas. Obviously, Chad Mendes is a significant talent in this division. Frankie Edgar desperately trying to get back to a title fight that he probably earned a year ago and is still trying to fight his way back to one. You know, he himself took his fight with Jose Aldo on short notice, and still, he lost a decision. It wasn't the most one-sided, lopsided decision. Aldo beat him, but Edgar was in that fight, and he's improved greatly at featherweight since then. These are two great fighters here, is what I'm trying to get across, and this is going to be a fantastic fight on Friday night.
Well, the top four in this division is really head and shoulders above every other fighter in the division. I mean, it's not close. To see what Mendes did to Lamas was, I felt bad for Lamas. He's a Chicago guy, so I was kind of rooted for him, but he wasn't competitive in that fight at all, and I didn't really expect him to be, but just to see the utter destruction that Mendes brought to that fight was still surprising, to say the least. I am a huge Frankie Edgar fan. He's one of my favorite fighters. His fight against Gray Maynard when he won the trilogy match is still one of my favorite fights ever. But Mendes is a scary opponent for anyone. You know, even guys like Jose Aldo. I know we've got a roundtable discussion coming up about this particular fight, if I'm not mistaken.
It'll be going up tomorrow. It was supposed to go up Wednesday, but life happens.
Gotcha. Well, I made my pick there, and I can see this fight going either way. It really, for me, comes down to Mendes has one-shot power. I think he hits harder than anyone in the featherweight division, Jose Aldo and Conor McGregor included. And Edgar is one of the pound-for-pound strongest fighters in the UFC, bar none.
Yeah.
If you've watched Edgar fight and seen him pick up guys in the lightweight division, pick him up over his shoulders, slam him to the ground. This guy's undersized. He's arguably undersized at featherweight. To do what he was doing against guys who probably had 20 to 30 pounds on him, I think he's going to be able to, if anyone's getting taken down in this fight, it's going to be Edgar shooting and setting up the takedowns with his boxing and getting Mendes to the ground. I don't see him finishing him at all, but I could see him outpointing him with ground control and a very strong technical boxing game throughout the match. The other way that fight ends is if someone finally puts Edgar's lights out, and if anyone can, that's Mendes. Mendes is the right guy for the job.
That's the really interesting thing about this matchup for me is normally Chad Mendes has an edge with the wrestling game, with his top game, with what he likes to do on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
But Frankie Edgar is a guy who throws that notion to the wind because he is even more dominant with what he does on the ground, and he's got great takedown defense. We just saw what Edgar did against Mendez's longtime mentor, trainer, training partner, Uriah Faber, earlier this year. And I'm not saying the same thing's going to happen, but I'm with you. If anyone's going to be taking anyone down in this fight, Frankie Edgar's going to be winding up on top. I don't see Frankie Edgar being stuck on his back for long in any fight, and this one's very much included in that.
Yeah, and it's not to sell Mendes short in his wrestling. He's one of the better wrestlers.
Absolutely not.
In that division, and he's a more decorated wrestler coming into the into mixed martial arts than Edgar was. Edgar is so polished in what he does. His boxing is on point, his footwork, his head movement, his wrestling, positions, takedown, all of that stuff. He's really made it a science. And I think he's going to be able to get, if anyone's getting taken down, he's going to be able to get under Mendes' hips, lift him up, get him on the ground. We'll see if that happens. I'm not convinced it's going to. Their wrestling may very well neutralize each other, but
if that happens, just throwing this out there, if that does happen, I actually really like Chad Mendes's striking game over Frankie Edgar.
Well, I like his ability to end the fight over Frankie, and Frankie has shown. You want to go back to Benson Henderson fights, the Gray Maynard fights. Every fight, he seems to eat a huge shot that would take most people's heads off and somehow keep fighting. There's your danger. I don't know if Mendes hits you like that. I'm not convinced you're standing anymore. And I like Edgar's technical boxing and striking much better. But if it's a standing war, can he really avoid the big punch for five rounds? That's a lot to ask.
Just to clarify, have you caught any of this season of The Ultimate Fighter? As this is the finale event we're talking about.
I have not. I read the recaps religiously, so I deserve some kind of kudos for that. But I have not watched it since the Anderson Silva Chael Sonnen was the last one I watched regularly. Been a while.
Yeah. All right, we've got Ryan Hall from Uriah Faber's Team US taking on Artem Lobov from Conor McGregor's Team Europe here. It was actually supposed to be Lobov against his Team Europe teammate Saul Rogers, but we found out on the final episode that after Rogers beat his own teammate Marcin Vrosek, that he allegedly falsified information on his passport. He has some legal issues getting in the country, and he was taken out of the finale. So a man he beat by majority decision during the season, Ryan Hall from Team US, will be fighting in the finals against Lobov, who is Conor McGregor's longtime training partner and teammate. Lobov was the only one on Team Europe whom McGregor had any connection with coming in, and it was very clear throughout the season. Lobov scored three knockout victories during his time on the show, which was interesting considering he didn't actually make it into the house on his own. As you said, you didn't watch the show, but he lost it was either a split or majority decision in the elimination two-round fight to get in the house, and was brought back by Dana White, and wound up making it to the finals with three straight finishes. I actually liked Lobov quite a bit on the show itself, but he's coming into this finals on Friday with an 11-10 record overall.
Ryan Hall type record there.
Yeah, Ryan Hall is a one note fighter. He has a very good submission game. He's a very 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 good jiu-jitsu practitioner, but he has no striking to speak of. And against Saul Rogers, he was controlled on the ground and wasn't able to do anything that makes him as effective as he is in his submission game. So he's a guy who can be figured out. I don't know that Lobov is the guy to do it. So I could see this ending by knockout for Lobov, or I could see him getting his leg ripped off Husamara Palhara style. Those are the two options in this fight if you had not watched anything this season.
Well, I think it speaks a lot to where this show has gone, and not necessarily through any fault of the UFC or the producers of the show itself, that the outcome of this fight really doesn't matter a whole lot, I think, to most fans. We're not seeing the Rashard Evans or the Forrest Griffin or the Forrest Griffins or who else is coming out?
It doesn't matter.
Sanchez.
It really doesn't matter is what you're trying to get at.
Josh Koscheck. Yeah, we're not seeing those guys anymore, and that's because fighters of that caliber have found promotions to sign with, be it a Bellator, a World Series of Fighting, or even smaller regional things. The good fighters are already fighting the UFC or other big promotions. And so the show itself, at best, is PR for the UFC or...
It's especially true when they go back to the same divisions that they've gone with over and over again. There's only so many times you can mine the lightweight division for some type of talent.
Yeah, well, talent's not there anymore. It's just,
it's
not. And that's, let's acknowledge that as what it is. And if you're watching the show now, it's because you really like mixed martial arts. You're a huge reality show fan, or you just haven't caught on that these guys aren't going to win a title, most likely. Kelvin Gastelum maybe being the exception. I could see him doing something down the road.
Now, this card was actually supposed to be even better, because we were supposed to have a fight between Khabib Nurmagomedov and Tony Ferguson in the co-main event. We still have a really good lightweight fight here with Edson Barboza stepping in as an injury replacement here. Barboza also last fought on the card you and I were at in Chicago in July.
I did see.
Beating Paul Felder in that one. Not his best performance, but a solid performance. Tony Ferguson, another of the Ultimate Fighter winners that we have been talking about.
Brock Lesnar year, is that right?
Yeah. He was on Team Lesnar, actually. Won that season. So, to be honest, Tony Ferguson has been fantastic, and you mentioned Kelvin Gastelum. It would not surprise me if Ferguson wins this particular fight, if he moves on and comes close to title contention, if not getting into a title fight with what he's done so far. He's won six straight fights in this lightweight field against several longtime veterans, including Danny Castillo, Gleison Tibau, and Josh Thompson. The Michael Johnson loss in 2012 it might be an outlier. It might be a harbinger of him having a significant ceiling. But Ferguson's been good enough in most aspects of what he does that I would not be surprised if he is a title challenger by 2017.
I think it's entirely possible. The Josh Thompson fight was, I'll be honest here, I actually have picked Ferguson to lose quite a few of his last few fights, in particular the Josh Thompson one. That was a big step for him. Thompson should have had a title shot against Pettis. He got robbed. I think he beat Benson Henderson. And I had held him on that level to this point, but Ferguson beat him convincingly. You know, that was there wasn't anything. The decision was the right decision. I don't think there was much of an argument to be made that Thompson won the fight. That was a big step for him, and it really moved Ferguson's ceiling up for me quite a bit.
Yeah.
Barboza, on the other hand, is a lot of fun to watch. What was it, the Felder fight? They set the record for most spinning strikes.
Something like that. They were trying to do something.
They spun a lot.
They tried so hard to do something that they did a whole lot of nothing.
Yeah, it was a lot of spinning, and which gets you oohs and ahs for a while at least, and you know it got old a couple rounds in. But Barboza's one of those guys. He's a lot of fun to watch. Exceptional kicks, great striking, but he always disappoints me when he makes it to the big fight. You know, Donald Cerrone's, the Michael Johnsons. I just don't think he's got what it takes to get over that hump. Which is not to say he's a bad fighter. But his ceiling may be very exciting in the top 10 Whereas Ferguson's looks a little bit higher than that now. So I think Ferguson's going to win this fight.
Moving on down the main card, we've got Ryan LaFlair against Mike Pierce in welterweight action. LaFlair, very talented guy, lost for the first time in a 5-round main event in March to Damian Maia, who is one of the elite competitors in this field. Mike Pierce returning for the first time since he had his leg mangled by Husamar Palhares, who was subsequently released by the UFC because of that fight. Intriguing matchup on some levels, but also the type of fight that could be really, really dull on Friday night.
I think potentially dull and not a very inspiring fight. I think LaFlair is parked in the top 15. He's probably going to stay there. I don't know that he's going to get a whole lot higher than 15, maybe 12. He's very technically sound. I don't feel like he has the natural athletic ability to necessarily compete with the top in their division. And I don't know that Pierce really has that. They deserve to be in the UFC. They're UFC fighters. I don't see either of these guys contending for a title in their career.
Yeah. Wrapping up the main card, we've got Gabriel Gonzaga taking on Konstantin Arokin. Just kind of showcasing how this Friday night card is the worst of the weekend.
Yeah.
Gonzaga off 3 straight losses, including 2 by stoppage, including to Mirko Krokop in April, in just not a very good fight. And Arokin coming in off a loss to Victor Pesta in January of this year. 9-2 at 33 out of Moscow. Has a lot of stoppage wins. Not a very good grappler, as shown in that fight with Pesta. I think this is primed for Gonzaga to get a bounce-back win.
Well, it's either a bounce-back win or he gets cut. Because if he can't...
Very little in between.
Yeah, if he can't win this fight, there's just really not a place for him in the UFC, even as a gatekeeper at this point. So,
yeah. All right, let's move to Saturday night. Let's move to the most important of the weekend. We've got Jose Aldo, Conor McGregor in the main event, Chris Weidman, Luke Rockhold at co-main, Jacare Souza, Yoel Romero, third from the top. And then we... round out this pay-per-view card with Damian Maia against Gunnar Nelson and Max Holloway against Jeremy Stephens. As main cards go, I don't know that the UFC has ever put on a better 5-fight main card than what we're getting on Saturday night.
Yeah, I this has everything. I mean, yeah. Anything you want to see in mixed martial arts is potentially going to be here. Submissions, knockouts, different fighting styles, championships, you name it, that's what you got on Saturday night.
Yeah. All right, we're start at the top, as we've been doing throughout this episode. Aldo McGregor. Jose Aldo is simply the best fighter the featherweight division has ever seen. I appreciate what Conor McGregor has done to date, and I think he did fantastic work in getting past Chad Mendez in July the way that he did. He's got the power in his strikes to be a significant challenge. He's got he doesn't have a great wrestling game and doesn't have much to offer off his back. He's not easy to put away, which always gives him opportunities on the feet. With those caveats out of the way, I really, really see this as Jose Aldo finally getting the star-making performance that should have been attributed to him prior to December 12th of 2015.
Well, Aldo has that, he's seems to be missing that thing that people care about, whatever it is, because his record.
It's because he does not speak English very well in a, unfortunately, Trump-loving America.
Well, I think that has a lot to do with it. But he also comes across to me, and maybe this, you know, screams more of my ignorance than of Aldo's personality. It's just kind of boring. This is not to take away from what he's done. The guy is, he's one loss his entire career. I don't think he's lost a fight in over 10 years, something like that. But when you're at a lighter weight class, you already run the danger of people not being interested because, number one, either morons think, you look at a guy who's 125, 135, 145 pounds, you think, you know, I could take that guy. I mean, look at that guy. That guy's tiny. I could take him. You either think that or you're just afraid to admit that one of these smaller persons can kick your ass. So either way, you know, people just have an aversion to watching some of these smaller weight classes fight. And, you know, you add to that Aldo's lack of fluency in English, personality that doesn't really show up. Maybe a lot of stuff is lost in translation. And you're right. He's not getting the respect he deserves as a fighter. Let's go to the other end of the spectrum. Conor McGregor is getting more respect than most fighters can dream of in their lives. And up until beating Chad Mendes, he really hadn't beat anyone that was particularly impressive. He beat them in impressive ways, but they weren't fighters that made you stand up and say, hey, this guy is the real deal.
I'm going to be honest. The Max Holloway win looks better and better every single day. And with how much Holloway has improved since then, given McGregor did that with a significant knee injury at the time, I was really impressed by that fight in retrospect, looking back on that, and obviously what he did to Chad Mendes, not only on short notice, not preparing for that style of fighter, but off of an injury himself. I mean, as much as we can talk about Chad Mendes only having 2 weeks to prepare for that fight, McGregor entered UFC 189 having been hampered in training by a significant knee injury that didn't allow him to throw kicks until, what, a week before the event? And so there's a lot going on in this particular matchup, and back to Jose Aldo. I mean, I think a lot of the criticisms of Jose Aldo and his style in the last several years are valid. The way that he fought against Frankie Edgar, the way that he fought against Ricardo Lamas, the way that he fought against going back to Kenny Florian, even the Mark Hominick fight in the UFC. I mean, a lot of his UFC fights have not been up to much of what he did in the WEC.
Right.
This is a sign of a fighter who realized he was so far ahead of the competition that he didn't need to give his best effort, and so he didn't. And I think that's something to criticize him for at times. Now, Chad Mendes, in Aldo's most recent fight, forced him to put forth his best effort, and it's the response that Jose Aldo had to adversity in that fight in October of last year that really makes me believe Conor McGregor is not going to beat him on Saturday night, because there's so much more there in Jose Aldo that if there's anything that threatens him, he turns it up another notch. He has more in what he does than he's shown. And if McGregor is any bit the challenger that he purports himself to be, Aldo is going to respond in kind. That's kind of how I'm approaching this fight.
Well, it's hard to pick against Jose Aldo on the basis of what he's done, on the basis of how long he's been doing it for, on the basis of just watching his performances. And you're right, that Mendez fight really forced him into a place where he hadn't had to go for a very long time. I believe that was fight of the year in 2014, and deservedly so. And Aldo really had to dig deep. And you're right, I think we've kind of forgotten. I mean, look, the Mark Hominick fight, I think, was a great example to bring up. I know he had trouble with his weight cut then, but the last round of that fight, I'm pretty sure I remember Hominick being on top and Aldo yep. just being tired. You know, and there wasn't any doubt that Aldo won the fight when the decision was read, and I no complaint there.
Yeah, Hominick with the gigantic egg growing out of his forehead.
Yeah, that was scary, a scary thing. But it's that type of thing that has really made us forget that Aldo is an exceptionally violent striker. You know, the leg kicks that he crippled Uriah Faber with are things that no one can stand up to. Now, as I said, it's hard to pick against Jose Aldo. I was fortunate enough to be at UFC 189 and see McGregor and Mendez fight, and subsequently lose a bunch of money placed on Mendez. But
not as much as Brian Heminger, I'm sure.
No, not actually. In total, with all the parlays I put Mendez in, I think I came out, about the same. Bad night. Let's just leave it at that.
Love you, Brian.
Gambling-wise, bad night. Didn't care. The fights were so spectacular. The environment was so amazing. The Irish throwing everything they could get their hands on into the air when McGregor, when McGregor took the interim title was just something I'm never going to forget. What I like about McGregor in this fight is you get past his bravado, you get past the outlandish personality that is really fun to watch. I mean, you know, the stuff the guy says, you want to come, you said the Trump-style America that we're dealing with. Yes, that is what McGregor brings, not nearly as asinine for the most part or offensive, but he says those things that you're like, well, I can't believe he said that. That's, you know, he's got some balls on him. Once you get past all of that and break him down as a fighter, he's got a couple of things going for him. He's huge for that division. Aldo is a big fighter for the featherweight division. McGregor is bigger. And McGregor's best tool is the straight punch he throws with enough power to put a guy on the floor. You don't see that very often. Straight punch, pinpoint accuracy. He has a reach advantage, but when you're winging hooks with power, some of your advantage goes out the window. McGregor gets the most out of his advantage because he throws a straight punch. And I think that's, if Aldo's not going to take him down, if this is going to turn into a striking affair, and if McGregor can avoid getting kicked to death, his striking has the potential to give Aldo fits.
Yeah.
That's the. So I'm going to. It's hard to pick against Aldo. I'm going to take McGregor in this fight.
Interesting.
Yeah.
The great thing about Conor McGregor right now is that to date he's at least backed up everything that he's said. I mean, it's, you know, you can talk about level of competition, but at the same time, you can only beat what's put in front of you.
No, that's true, and he's done it in a fairly convincing manner.
Yes.
I lost a lot of money picking Chad Mendez to beat him because as impressive as his wins were to that point, he had never really, in retrospect, Max Holloway, yes, looks a lot better now than it did. But he really never beaten anyone. You know, he seemed to be this guy that was fed a bunch of tomato cans because he was exciting and people got behind him and the UFC wanted to build up a contender. And that Mendez fight was 2 weeks or not. I never really liked this 2 weeks thing, particularly when Mendez came out and said it, because it's like, look, either you felt like you couldn't beat him with only 2 weeks of training, or he was better than you thought he was. It's one of those two things, if you're going to make an excuse. And so I really don't like that. But 2 weeks or not, he did beat one of the top four, himself being one of the other ones, one of the top four fighters in that division. And you're right, he's backed up everything he said so far.
Let's talk about Chris Weidman, Luke Rockhold. Rich and I had a conversation, I think about a month ago, maybe a little bit longer, about this fight. At the time, it was gun to my head, who would I pick? And I went with Rockhold, and I'm still partially leaning that way into Saturday night. I think Luke Rockhold is as talented a fighter as Weidman, as talented a fighter in this middleweight division that we've seen, and based off what he did to Lyoto Machida, their key shared opponent, I don't want to discount what happened against Vitor Belfort for either fighter, but those are two very different versions of Vitor Belfort that the two of them fought. I don't think that they were necessarily massively different versions of Lyoto Machida. Rockhold destroyed, just absolutely demolished Lyoto Machida earlier this year. Chris Weidman had a tougher time with him last year, had an injury coming into that fight. I will throw that caveat out there. But I think Luke Rockhold is every bit the fighter Chris Weidman is, and that's what makes this fight so fascinating. They're both fantastic on the feet. They're both fantastic on the ground. They have the best skill set you could hope for competing at this level in MMA. And in a coin flip or with gun to my head, it's all leaning Rockhold to me. But none of it would be surprising. Nothing here would surprise me because I just honestly, I can't say that I have a clue as to how it will actually play out. I really think Rockhold can and will win this fight, but at the end of the day, I'm fully willing to admit that I could be completely off base 100%. And Weidman comes in and beats Rockhold in this fight. There's so much going on with this particular matchup, and I love everything about the fight itself.
So do I. I've been wanting this fight for a long time. This is the fight, more so than Aldo McGregor, that I'm looking forward to. You know, it's not that it's hard to pick a winner in this fight. It's hard to pick a loser. You just can't imagine either of these fighters losing. We've seen Weidman take Machida's best shots, take Belfort's flurry of punches for a couple of minutes, and just kind of shrug it off like nothing had happened. I mean, I remember when Machida can knock people out, or at least he could once upon a time. And I remember when he tagged Weidman a couple of times, Weidman just, you know, motioned him forward, you know, Keanu Reeves Matrix style, like, you know, is that what you got? Come on, bring it, type of thing. And he's one of the things that I didn't realize about Weidman until after he had beat Silva the first time was how long his arms were. Silva had always made it a point to pick people apart from the outside, and he had a tremendous reach in that division. Weidman was the first guy, I think, that he had ever fought that had a reach advantage on him. But, you know, hey, maybe if you take 2 inches off of Weidman's arms, doesn't connect on that punch in the first fight that put Silva on the canvas. But, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, Weidman has a lot of power, but he's got tremendous reach for a 185-pound fighter. Almost equaled by Rockhold, though, and Rockhold being, I think he's taller. He looks taller. He's a very tall, lanky fighter. So, yeah, hard to pick a loser.
Rockhold's got an inch on Weidman.
In height?
Weidman's 6'2", Rockhold 6'3". Weidman reached 78 inches, Rockhold 77, Weidman actually has the slight edge in reach. So this is that's the thing, is this is so even. This is so even. I hate to throw out a legitimate result in a, you know, spinning heel kick taking out Luke Rockhold, because it happened. It happened. That happened. We have evidence of him getting knocked out and getting stopped. But there are so many other intangible things in the matchup itself that make me look at this and say it's so even. It's so even that I really honestly don't know. I continue to lean Luke Rockhold, but I honestly 100% do not know.
Well, I'm leaning the same way you are, and a lot of it does come down to that Machida fight. Weidman won. There's no question that he won by decision. Rockhold just made me think that Machida may want to think about, you know, quitting, just because the sheer amount of damage he took from those elbows before he got choked out. It was that's kind of what did it for me. You know, do some MMA math, which rarely works out, but Rockhold having a more dominant performance over Machida. And I just see his game as being a little bit more refined than Weidman at this stage. And I also see, if you look at Rockhold versus Weidman, I know he's coming in a bit lighter for this camp due to the, you know, the ban on the rehydrating with the IVs. Weidman, his last fight, not that he looked fat, not that he looked overweight, not that he looked like, but he wasn't as ripped as Rockhold looks all the time. Rockhold has packed an insane amount of muscle onto his frame. He seems to have 0% fat and just thick layered muscle. That seems like a silly thing to make a fight pick on, but I really don't have much else. You know, they're just so even. I actually placed a bet on Rockhold when this fight was first announced months and months ago, and a slight underdog, and I'm sticking with that prediction. Nothing's really changed my mind. Although, you know, again, I don't know how this fight's gonna play out. You want to tell me what's gonna happen on the ground, on the feet? No idea.
This division obviously has a lot to sort out, and a lot of it's gonna be done on Saturday night as the other main middleweight fight pits Jacare Souza against Yoel Romero. Romero coming off a sick KO over Machida himself very shortly after Luke Rockhold got the job done earlier this year. Jacare, his biggest problem right now is he just hasn't gotten the matchups necessary to move him into title contention. A lot of that's through no fault of his own, which is unfortunate. Because he's had some injury dropouts and some other things that have affected who he's been able to fight and when. He's still clearly among the best ground fighters in this sport. Jacare Souza is the elite of the elite when it comes to submitting fighters in MMA. The Gegard Mousasi fight from last year really, really stands out. And
it wasn't competitive. I mean,
And as good as Yoel Romero has been, as impressive as the Machida win was, as brutal as his ground and pound can be, I just don't see it as a match for Jacare's submission game. I think Jacare gets the job done, gets his title fight against the winner of Weidman-Rockhold, because even if Rockhold beats Weidman, I don't think this is going to be another automatic rematch of that fight. I think the Weidman-Jacare rematch the Rockhold-Jacare rematch would be even more compelling than an immediate rematch between Rockhold and Weidman. So I think we're going to wind up seeing a Strikeforce title rematch in 2016 more than a UFC rematch.
Yeah, I would. I agree with that. I think this is Jacare's fight. And I hope it is. He's a guy that, it's like you said, it's no fault of his own. I mean, he's beaten everyone that's been put in front of him. It's just the caliber of fighters that he's gone up against as opposed to who Rockhold has beaten. Just, it's not nearly as impressive. I know he's, and, you know, the fact that Rockhold holds a win over him, too, albeit, when was that? It was like 6 years or 4 years ago? I don't know. It was Strikeforce. It was a little while ago. But, yeah, Rockhold deserves a title shot right now. But I really do want to see Jacare get another one. The guy's 36 years old. He doesn't have a whole lot of fights left in him. And it's becoming, if he wins this fight, his motivation for taking another shot and or another match and potentially losing that title shot is pretty nil, unless he just needs money. You know, there's a... I don't see Romero, also an older fighter who probably doesn't have a whole lot of years left, just by virtue of his age. I don't see him having the game either to do what he did to Machida, not to Jacare. I think this is just a bad matchup for him.
For clarification's sake, the Rockhold Jacare fight happened in September of 2011, so a little over 4 years ago. Moving on down the UFC 194 card, the main card also features Damian Maia against Gunnar Nelson at welterweight. Maia off three straight wins, including an impressive submission over Neil Magny. Nelson with a really, really big bounce back win over Brandon Thatch in July, after losing a split decision to Rick Story in October of last year. So Nelson, 14-1-1 overall coming in against Maia off of six wins in eight welterweight fights in the UFC. Maia is a fantastic ground fighter. He is a decent striker. Gunnar Nelson is a fantastic ground fighter. He's a decent striker. This is another one of those really evenly matched up fights. I think Maia might have an edge in the grappling department. Nelson might have an edge on the feet. But I really don't know how this fight will play out. I lean Maia, but again, this is one of those fights that almost nothing would surprise me in how it plays out.
Well, I'm leaning Maia too, and it's one of those things. At some point, a guy that's Maya's age, which sadly is my age, Maya's 38 years old, but at some point he's just going to start losing because he's going to, you know, be past his prime. And with every fight that he has, I continually wonder, is this it for him? Is this it for him? Is this where he's on the definitive downside of his career and really it's just only going to get worse from here on out? If you take that out of the equation, I think this is Maya's fight to lose. Gunnar Nelson has always struck me as a guy who maybe should try the cut to 155. He's not a huge welterweight by any means, and I think, you know, Maia used to fight at 185. I think he's definitely going to have a size and strength advantage over him. So again, assuming Maia has not just all of a sudden gotten too old, I think he's going to be able to do to Nelson potentially what Jake Shields did to him and win a very boring grappling affair. But sometimes it doesn't work that way. Sometimes the grappling cancels itself out and you have a really sloppy striking match between two guys who'd rather be on the ground. So, I don't anticipate that, but anything can happen.
Let's talk a potentially more exciting fight as Max Holloway takes on Jeremy Stephens at featherweight. Holloway riding technically a 7-fight win streak, although the win over Charles Oliveira in August is marred by the fact that it was an injury and potential medical condition more than anything else. Still, Holloway was looking good in that fight prior to what happened. He had stopped 5 of 6 fighters going into that matchup. Stevens, a longtime vet, coming off of a TKO win over Dennis Bermudez, but he had dropped a couple of decisions prior to that. He's also been stopped several times in his career, or he's been beaten several times in his career, I should say. He's been stopped on a couple of occasions. But this is a very winnable fight for Max Holloway. It's also potentially a statement win for Stevens to try to argue for a title fight in the featherweight field.
Yeah, it is that. I think out of all the guys that could potentially join, you know, the big four of Aldo, McGregor, Edgar, and Mendez, Holloway is the most likely, particularly when you consider kid's only 24 years old. And what he did to Cub Swanson shocked me. I had Swanson kind of up there as one of those interchangeable, you know, top four, top five fighters. And that fight was not close. You know, not only did he beat him up for the better part of 3 rounds, he finished him, which I didn't see coming ever. And Stevens is a dangerous opponent. Stevens is a very big featherweight, big enough that I don't think he made weight his last fight at 189. But he's big and he packs a lot of power. I don't, you know, it would be a statement victory for him to potentially move into that, the realm of title talk. I don't see it happening with Holloway. Holloway being on the upswing, being young, starting to realize some of his very vast potential. I think he's going to win, and, you know, what's next up for him? Top five opponent. We were really robbed with the Charles Oliveira fight, that one ending so early, because Oliveira is another one of those guys with just a crazy amount of potential and a lot of fun to watch. His submission game is so unique, just some of the things he can pull out of there at such a young age. But I've got Holloway in this. Out of all the fights, this is one of the easier picks for me.
As we said, we're going to run back down the prelim fights here for each of the three events. We're going to go pretty rapid fire through this. So prelims tomorrow night, we've got Tim Means against John Howard at welterweight, Omar Yakhmetov against Sergio Moraes, Antonio Carlos Jr. against Kevin Casey, Aljamain Sterling against Johnny Eduardo, Santiago Ponzinibbio against Andreas Stahl, Danny Roberts against Nathan Coy, Zubaira Tukugov against Felipe Nover, and Kaylin Curran against Emily Kagan. What stands out to you on the prelims there? Obviously, I think Sterling Eduardo is the key fight on these prelims. Anything else that you're looking forward to, and how do you think Sterling Eduardo plays out in particular?
Well, I've got Sterling winning that fight, and that really is the fight. It's buried is almost doing that. Buried isn't even the right word. It should be somewhere much more noticeable as opposed to in the prelims on a fight pass event. But I have Sterling winning that fight, and the most interesting thing about that is not necessarily whether that he's going to win, but what happens when he does win. I think he made it pretty publicly known that he's a free agent, or his contract is up after this fight, and he's considering, am I getting this right? Was he considering walking away? Something like
that? I think so. Something like that.
Interesting call.
He's looking at testing free agency. He turned down the most recent offer from the UFC. He did not think it was acceptable for where he felt he was going to be within a couple of fights, and so we'll see how that one plays out.
You know, he's potentially two fights away from a title shot. And if he feels like he deserves more, then he should absolutely try free agency. I mean, that's the right move. This isn't like, you know, Gary Payton and Karl Malone in the NBA where they've made a bunch of money and they go take minimum deals so they can try to win a title. I mean, these guys have a very short window to earn money. They don't make a lot of it, the majority of them. And if he's got some options and some leverage to use here, he should use it. And the most leverage is going to come by a win on Saturday night before when his contract's expiring. I've got him winning. The other fight that I'm looking forward to, just purely from entertainment standpoint, is Means versus Howard. Howard is a boring fighter to me, but Means is kind of a goofy character and very violent fighter. Just he throws a lot of nasty elbows out there. It has a decent submission game and primed for a finish here. Exciting one.
On Friday night, the FS1 prelims, at least as far as what we know at the moment. I'm sure they're going to be adding some competitors from this season of The Ultimate Fighter. But right now we have Joe Lauzon against Evan Dunham, Tatsuya Kawajiri against late replacement Jason Knight, and Joby Sanchez against late replacement Gene Herrera. Obviously had some injuries taking their toll on this fight card. Lauzon Dunham, really solid lightweight fight. Not much else to speak about on Friday's prelims.
No, I mean, the assumption I make here is that's going to be the fight right before the main card starts, and that's about the time I'm going to tune into this card. Lauzon fights, guy's never gonna be a top contender, but he's a heck of a lot of fun to watch. I kind of worry with him that he's taking too much damage in his career, the style that he has. It makes him a lot of money in fight bonuses, and here's the hoping he doesn't pay the price later on with continued blows to the head. But that should be an exciting fight. Lauzon to win.
Finishing out our conversation tonight, let's talk about the prelims on Saturday night at UFC 194. Four fights on Fox Sports 1, three fights on UFC Fight Pass, and pretty much everything on this card at UFC 194 would be more than welcome on any of the events this week. They're all really, really good matchups, or at least feature really good talent. We start with Uriah Faber against Frankie Saenz in the final fight prior to the pay-per-view broadcast itself. Tisha Torres against a late replacement in Jocelyn Jones at Liebarger. Warley Alves, who has been one of the brighter prospects out of the Ultimate Fighter system from Tough Brazil, taking on Colby Covington, another really talented guy at welterweight who has had some entertaining performances in the UFC. Leonardo Santos takes on Kevin Lee. Joe Proctor takes on Magomed Mustafayev. And John McDessie takes on Yancy Medeiros. Finally, Court McGee against Marcio Alexandre Jr. So that's your seven-fight prelims on Saturday night. I think we've got a couple of standouts here. Faber in action. Tisha Torres in action. Warley Alves, Colby Covington is a fantastic welterweight fight for the prelims. Kevin Lee, it has been a very good lightweight prospect. Really just tons to like on the UFC 194 card on Saturday night.
Well, the great thing about this undercard is even for these fighters that you haven't heard of, these are all potentially relevant fighters at some point in the future. At least the fights all seem to feature at least one of those. The Covington-Alves fight in particular, both those guys are young prospects who have brought some exciting, bring some exciting things to the table and have good records. You know, potentially one of them makes some noise down the road in the welterweight division. The guy I like is, I'm going to butcher his name here, but Magomed Mustafa, that guy, Mustafa, whatever. Mm-hmm. The Russian?
Magomed Mustafayev.
Thank you. He's his last fight against Hallman, I think that was kind of an unexpected victory, especially with how he finished it on the Njaychik card, the fight night card.
Yeah.
Someone to keep an eye on, The division that he fights in is deep, and it's really hard to make a dent at lightweight. But he's 12-1. He's been winning convincingly. He had a very good performance his first fight in the UFC, and he's one of those guys that, again, it's potential. It's a tough division to crack, but maybe sometime down the road. Obviously, Faber. I'd pick Faber to win that fight. Faber's one of those guys that everyone wants to fight him because you can make a name by beating him, and he's good enough to beat everyone except whomever's holding the title at this point. But, fun to watch. I anticipate he wins, and Torres should maintain her status as one of the top strawweights in the women's division with a victory at 194.
All right, that brings us to the pretty much end of our rundown of these three events. Any final thoughts, Mike, on what we've got coming up in the next 3 days, and then even adding in next weekend with the UFC on Fox card?
Well, if you like high quality mixed martial arts, this might be the happiest, 10-day stretch you're ever going to have in your life. I mean, the cards are just that good, and I'm really looking forward to it. My fifth wedding anniversary happens to be December 12th. I'm thankful that my wife is a mixed martial arts fan. And so I am moderately hopeful I'm going to be able to watch 194, or at least to catch the type two title fights. But I guess I can console myself with, even if I miss those and have to see them on replay while avoiding the internet all day Sunday, there's plenty of good stuff in the other cards, and obviously next week as well.
Well, thank you, Mike, once again for joining me here tonight. We are going to have live coverage of each of these three events from the UFC this weekend. We'll have some prelim quick results and commentary on the Fight Pass prelims with live round-by-round coverage of the main card. We'll also have main card live round-by-round coverage on Friday night, and we will have most of Saturday's UFC 194 event covered with a round-by-round report, again with some prelims straggled in by quick results and commentary. So again, thank you, Mike, for joining me tonight to break this all down. This will be going live on Thursday, so for those of you listening, hopefully you check this out before Thursday's fights. And hopefully Thursday's fights don't completely negate everything that we say.
Well, thanks for having me, Jamie, and happy holidays to everybody.
Again, thank you all for listening in. For Michael Bain, this is Jamie Pettick signing off.